You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and England legend, Luther Blissett. Paris is here as well. We got Paris.
Well, back of the times, Stokes wanted Hales dropped.
Yeah.
So we're talking a bit of cricket here because England, of course, playing their first warm-up match ahead of this, ahead of the ODI series versus Pakistan, which then, of course, eventually leads on to the World Cup, which begins on the 30th of May. So they're playing Ireland today. It's kind of Owen Morgan was talking to the press, but he revealed kind of yesterday that meeting with senior players, which included Ben Stokes, recommended Hales' deselection because of a breakdown in trust with the rest of the squad. Him saying Alex's actions have shown complete disregard for team values.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's the
point. Players should be applauded for that.
Yeah.
They should be applauded.
You know what? This could really bring the England team together. I've got to be honest with you. Mm. Stuff like this. I'm not suggesting that we have a drug taker in every team. Who's the worst player? You take drugs. We'll condemn you. And look at us. We'll be a team. But it just seems to me that this team has bonded over this issue. They've gone, no, this is not, what do they say? Team values.
Team values.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They do have values, and Alex Hales has twice now been caught with recreational drugs. You know, putting aside all that, 21 days is not enough. The ECB trying to keep it quiet is not a good idea. I understand the reasons behind it with Tom Maynard and what happened with him. But you know what? You cannot keep a drugs cheat in the dressing room.
No.
It's not good for team morale. And at this time when we're talking, you know, there's a whole story about Jarrell Miller and all the drugs he was taking and the boxing. You know what? You can't have drugs in top line sport. You cannot.
Shouldn't have it in sport at all. You know, when you're at the top of it and you're a national team as well, you cannot condone that.
So well done, the England players, in my opinion.
We're saying that this can't have necessarily been an easy decision for some of them to make. Because, I mean, Stokes is the one that's named here quite close to Alex Hales. You know, these are players that know him very well. It's a situation where you're going, look, you're my mate, but you've stepped over the line.
Well, that's the point. You have to tell your mates. That's what proper mates do, by the way.
That's what you have to do. You have to say to them, look, mate, that is not the way to behave.
No, mate. Sorry. You know what? It's because it also reflects badly on them if they decide to have this little silent, covert thing where they keep a drugs cheat. Because then everyone, as Luther said before 7 o'clock, everyone's looking at them going, who else is taking drugs? Are you taking drugs, Ben Stokes?
Are you, all taking it? Yeah, because you lot have just kept it quiet.
You know what? In the end, it's a no-brainer. And I know what you're saying. It possibly a difficult decision. I'm not sure it was that difficult decision. I bet they all, the second time he did it, I think they all thought, nah, we're not having this. Because then you're essentially, it's a serial offender. Hmm. Well, sorry, mate. We can't have you anywhere near that dressing room. Because let's say we win the World Cup. England win the World Cup. And are people going to be looking at the team going, yeah, it might have been drugs, probably drugs.
Yeah. If it's not recreational, are they taking, you know, performance-enhancing drugs? Are they doing this? And it puts asks too many questions about what possibly could happen if they win the tournament. So,
Right move.
But, of course, they only learnt about this, you know, the reason for him being, because, of course, there was a confidentiality when he got the 21-day ban.
Yeah.
Owen Morgan only learnt about why it was a 21-day ban at the same time as the public.
Yeah.
He was not told by the ECB.
No.
And of course, you know, it's saying, you know, these players have got him dropped. Actually, they've decided that they've only sent a recommendation to Ashley Giles, who then has to implement it. Hmm. And Ashley Giles has said, well, if it didn't come out, he would have been playing.
Yeah, look, what the ECB's handling of this has not been ideal in any way. And the fact that they would have been happy to keep it quiet, just keep it to themselves and let him play. I'm glad this come out. I mean, I am glad, and I think the players have done the right thing. The players acted when they found out, didn't they?
Because it would have come out during the tournament, and that would possibly be the worst possible time.
Way worse.
Another story to do with England cricket is another player that some of the other players have been talking about is Jofra Archer, who is expected to get his crack of the whip against Ireland today to have a go. And also, you know, there's some other players getting their go. Ben Foulkes, David Milan, Duckett also getting, thinking that he'll get an opportunity to play today.
But everyone's looking at Jofra Archer.
Everyone is looking at Jofra Archer. He's not in the preliminary squad of 15 men.
No, but
but if he goes in and, let's say, skittles Ireland, or, you know, gets fantastic economy rates, whatever, can you avoid him?
They have to seriously think about it. You know, they have to seriously think about having him in there. I mean, whether he's going to start or whatever, I think it's handy person to have when you're going into a tournament. Definitely. If he can deliver today and show that he's got the temperament to do it when it matters, then goodness me.
I mean, look, I think their plan is to use him in the tournament, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's playing in the final if England get there. But one step at a time, do well today and then see where we are.
Well, the question is, there's potentially three debuts today. You've got less than a month to the World Cup. Is this the time to be introducing players, or should there have been a settled squad? Obviously, you've had to get rid of one player who was settled in the squad, but should you have had a settled squad to start with, or is this the time to experiment?
I mean, Luther, I don't know what you think, but in the end, they've got to experiment at some point, and it's still a few weeks to go.
Oh, it's still plenty of time before. It's not as if they're making wholesale changes. Yes, they're looking at one or two people because the squad needs to have more breadth than what it's got at the moment. You know, so if you do have an injury or whatever, you can just bring people in and you don't have to think about it. You know, they're straight in. It's almost they're the next one in.
Also, I would suggest that cricket is not quite the same as, say, football, where there's much more coordination between what people are doing, whereas cricket is more about individual performances, isn't it? And you can say, he's not bowling well, bring in another bowler. And as long as they're not, you know, it's all okay for team spirit, I don't think it's a problem particularly. I think England have got to get the best 11 people on that pitch for that first World Cup game and then see how it goes from there. Because there'll be changes through the tournament anyway. I would expect.
I mean, as you say, the first World Cup game, May 30th against South Africa. Before that, got Ireland today, a series against Pakistan, which begins on Sunday. And then two World Cup warm-up games, one against Australia and one against Afghanistan, who I'm going to see at the World Cup. Afghanistan versus Bangladesh. Thoroughly looking forward
to it. Amazing. So that is eight games in total. That is plenty of time. That's plenty of time. Let's see today what Jofra Archer does, and then we'll go from there.
Love sport.
Right, Michelle Flatt and his daughter went, Daddy, he hasn't got a lot of work on. He's a really talented composer. And they went, okay. If anything, I was appalled by this. What happened was my mate told me at half-time last night, and I kept thinking about it for the rest of the day. And I just thought, if anything speaks to you of how ridiculous UEFA is as an organisation, it's the fact that Michel Platini's son-in-law wrote the Europa League thing. Because obviously they needed a theme for the Europa League, didn't they? They needed some sort of theme. And so I guess maybe Michel Platini was at dinner with his daughter. Said, oh, we need a theme.
I've got just the theme for you. Because I actually have a friend that actually does this sort of thing, this sort of music and whatever.
Yeah,
and,
me as well. Yeah. Right.
And it is brilliant. I went to his house because he's got a studio there.
And he's got a big house,
and,
right?
Yeah, he has, yeah. And this stuff, when he's playing it in there, you think to yourself, we can't wait to get out there and start playing when this music comes on. It's brilliant.
Well, yeah, but that Europa League theme's a bit... I mean, like I say, I always think we should have the theme tune to Only Fools and Horses when they run out for the Europa League. I reckon that would work, would it not? Would it not for the Europa League? It's not Champions League. Champions League's also pretentious nonsense, isn't it, really? Don't you think?
Have you seen the lyrics to there is lyrics to that song.
There are not.
It's literally just saying the best in French, German and English and then the champions at the very end.
Oh, it's just the best, the best, the best, the best.
The best,
the greatest, the best.
Big match and then the champions at the end.
It makes you want to vote Brexit, doesn't it? You know, it makes you want to just get a blue passport and be a racist for a while.
Right.
No? Oh, right, maybe not. Anyway.
Yeah, let's talk Arsenal, shall we?
Let's talk Arsenal in that outstanding competition.
Of course, Arsenal winning...
Love the Europa League.
3-1 last night against Valencia. Some of the headlines for you. Smart Alex goes the mail. Piggy Baku goes the sun.
Piggy what?
Piggy Baku.
Oh,
because you've got the picture of basically Lacazette appearing to hold up both Aubameyang and Guendouzi at the same time.
Aubameyang jumped on Lacazette's back. Guendouzi jumped on Aubameyang's back.
And of course, they're all off to Baku, is what the sun's gone for
there. That's what they're saying.
Alba the Moon, the star. Aubameyang, so Alba the Moon.
Thank
over
you for
the moon.
Explaining that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have had a clue.
And
what
the Telegraph
about.
Going with Alexandra the Great.
What's that about then?
Well, if you don't know, I can't tell you.
Oh my God, I've had girlfriends who used to say that to me. What's wrong with you? If you don't know, I'm not telling you. Yeah, which is why one of the reasons they said you can never have female refs. That's not my joke. Tim Clark used to love that joke. Ref, what have I done wrong? If you don't know, I'm not telling you. I used to love that gag. It's great. Right. Anyway,
Arsenal winning 3-1 last night in a display that lots of people are saying was not entirely convincing.
It was Arsenal, mate. Well, it's not entirely convincing. Of course it was not entirely convincing. We still look dodgy at the back.
Yeah, both the Telegraph and the Mail kind of saying attacks struggle to compensate for the comedy behind them.
Yeah.
Is the Telegraph.
That's the Arsenal defence, mate.
Fiery frontline bails out the nervy defence.
What do we say now? We used to say Keystone Cop defending, right? But obviously people of your generation, you would know Paris, because you are...
That's
do you not
gone.
Know?
No.
Really? See, do you know what it is?
Discovered something.
No, Keystone Cop defending.
Gone.
People don't
gone
do it
now,
the
mate.
Keystone
gone
Cops in, what, 1910, 1920, Max Sennett, who was the person who brought Charlie Chaplin over to Hollywood, had the Keystone Cops. And they were basically 15 or 20 policemen and they used to career around trying to fight crime, and they would fall over each other and hit each other with ladders and whatever they would do.
Yeah.
It was all very slapstick, you know, comedy defending. Imagine Mustafi in a police outfit. That is Keystone
with a ladder.
That is Keystone Cops defending.
And that was kind of the first 15 minutes at least how Arsenal were defending. And it's that, because that first Valencia, of course, had that first chance about 2-3 minutes in from a free kick, where inexplicably, unexplainably, ball 2 yards out, Valencia defender hits it over Arsenal's bar.
Yes.
From 2 yards.
Yeah, and big chances.
They
could have been 2-0 up.
Could have been. And also, you were playing a team which contained 6 defenders. Valencia lined up with 4 recognised centre-backs across their back 4 and the full-backs playing wingers. So the Tony Pulis side of the Europa League.
Yeah,
credit to them, because not many of Tony Pulis' side conceded 3 goals.
No, that's true. No, thank you very much. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I really didn't know that many of their players, right? I mean, I didn't. Maybe that speaks to my lack of knowledge of Spanish football, but you know what? You can only watch so much. There's 6 in the Spanish league. I've seen snippets of them. Kevin Camero came on. I thought, I know who that is. But most of the players, I thought, I don't recognise them. And that tells you they're not a top-level European team. They're just not.
No, I mean, you're looking in Spain and places, really, you only look really at the 2, 3, maybe the 4 top teams. You really don't even care. It probably wouldn't even name many of the other teams in that league.
No, 3, you look at the top 3, you look at the top 4 or 5 in Italy, but then they've maybe got a bit more history about them. But I didn't know. Listen, Valencia hold out for Arsenal fans. You know, they lost to Valencia in a 1980 Cup Winners Cup final when we missed penalties. And they also lost to them about 10 years ago in the Champions League when John Carew outjumped Tony Adams.
Yes.
And we got beat on away goals. So there was a bit of, you know, I wanted to beat them last night.
Emery would have done, because that was his old club as well.
And that was his old club as well. I wanted to beat them. And you know what? Arsenal did enough. We'll see. Well, hopefully it'll be enough. We'll see what happens in the second leg.
But this is Love Sport.
Radio St. Luther after today. I've got gigs tonight. I'm working at the Top Secret Comedy Club, Luther.
Top Secret?
Yeah.
You can't tell me where it is, can you?
Now, what you do is you go, where is it? And I go, I can't tell you. That's how you do that joke.
Sorry, should we just start again?
No,
just wind it back.
The moment's passed. Anyway. Top Secret Comedy Club in Covent Garden. Basically, it's about 200 people, almost all Paris's age. Really, that's the truth of it. There's no grown-ups there, as far as I can tell. But they're a really good crowd. I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, it's fine.
You know,
it's fine.
I mean, there's no one there who's got children. That's what I mean. And they're all out, and my God, they drink. But it's quite a laugh. Paris is in. What have you got, Paris? Wanted to say something, Paris?
I was going to say, children in. I went to see Avengers Endgame for a second time.
Yes, for a second time. Well, you're more nerdy than actually you do give off a certain nerd sort of.
Yeah, I tend to.
And I'm not saying that's a bad
thing. That's all the women in my life tell me.
That's really funny. He's actually going, why are you laughing? Anyway, what about it?
Well, because my friend hadn't seen it, so I said I'd go with him.
Yeah.
And
I haven't seen it either. Would you take me? You would though, wouldn't you? You absolutely would.
Possibly. But the thing was, there was a parents who obviously wanted to go see it, but they brought a baby and like a 4-year-old.
A baby?
I know. And the thing is, the baby wasn't happy. And then there's a point in the film which is a bit, you know, and you hear the 4-year-old go, "Mummy, I don't like this. It's a bit scary."
Well, who brings a 4-year-old?
And you're going, I felt like turning around and going, why have you brought them?
Why are
you... Like, arms wide, kind of just going, what are you doing?
That's outrageous. Because I can't believe that people bring kids that young.
Do that.
I mean, listen, I understand. I went to see... Romeo and Juliet, right?
Which one?
Which one? The first one.
The first one.
The first one, right? Which is a Romeo and Juliet but only for kids with garden gnomes. Yeah, and I was with my young child, and I live tweeted it because I was so bored. I thought I'll go mad otherwise. Right, and I'm saying I hope this doesn't end the way that Romeo and Juliet ends, because otherwise this will upset the kids no end. It wasn't though. Spoiler alert. Slightly different ending. They've changed. They've had a few liberties with the Shakespeare thing, but then I guess having them as garden gnomes is liberties anyway, isn't
and,
it, really?
And the music by Elton John.
And the music by Elton John, that's right. Because Elton John didn't do the original Shakespeare music, did he? As far as I know.
No,
I know
not.
He's old, but he ain't that old. Anyway, I find it weird when people do that in films, taking kids along. My mate, who's Dave Johns, who I've told you about, who was I, Daniel Blake. He played the lead part in I, Daniel Blake. He decided to go along to his local cinema to see the film, right? He'd seen it, obviously, at various festivals and all the rest of it. But he went to his local cinema and he sat there quietly. And there's a couple behind him talking a little bit during the movie. So he turns around and he goes, "Will you be quiet? I'm trying to watch me film." Right? Because he's from the Northeast. And they almost pooped themselves. Because you don't really expect the star of the movie to turn around and tell it to shut up. Anyway, they didn't speak after that. What have you got, Paris?
Talking.
Could you imagine?
Remember that?
Oh my God, it's him! You're the thing. Yeah, what have we got?
Talking Endgame. The Russo brothers, who are the directors, have been on television doing interviews.
The Russo brothers sounds like a circus act from 1842. Now the Flying Russo brothers, doesn't it? Anyway, what about them?
Basically, they said this is the last weekend to go see it before they're lifting their ban on spoilers. So you've had basically before the movie started, they said, you know, don't spoil the end game.
Yeah.
They've got all the stars to put this out. And they've said, well, hang on, after Monday, you've had two weekends now.
I think that's a point, really. I mean, it's sort of difficult, isn't it? It's a bit like Game of Thrones as well. Once Game of Thrones ends, in the same way that when Breaking Bad ended, there has to be a point when we can talk about it in public. Maybe there should be forums for these things. Have you seen any games? Well, come to the forum. You can chat about whatever you've seen and the things that have happened and leave the rest of us alone. But they're basically saying, listen, you can talk about it in public from after the weekend.
After the weekend.
Yeah, Thronecast, isn't it? Thronecast is good.
Thronecast does
is funny.
That's right.
Funny.
Thronecast does the same thing. But what I'm saying is we do have a need to collectively talk about these things. And you've seen it twice. And I'm sure there's things that you could say right now that you'd like to say. What about the bit when? But you can't do that right now because the Russo brothers have ordered
They've told
you.
Me not to.
They've told you not to.
Ended loads of tweets with Thanos demands your silence, which I found quite amusing.
Did you?
Yeah.
Is that some sort of nerd joke?
Well, it's the main bad guy.
Is he?
He's called Thanos.
He's right, okay.
I mean,
well, see, that's
have
I
you
mean.
Seen any of the movies, Ian?
I don't know. Probably. Anyway.
Right, never mind. I'm going to move
really
on.
He's really upset with me.
I'm going to move on.
I was upset with him about Keystone Cops, but this is a different level. This is nerd upset.
22 Marvel movies. And you're just, never mind.
He's going to report me to the forum.
Slight change of pace for you. Cocaine found in all samples of shrimp tested in rural English counties.
I heard.
Rural area of eastern England, scientists have revealed that all samples of shrimp, not some, all have
cocaine.
Found cocaine.
Because basically it's in the water because people are taking cocaine and peeing and it goes into the water supply. Eels, apparently. There's cocaine in a lot of eels.
It's going to make jellied eels very different, isn't it?
I've lost my appetite. It's weird. I'm just enjoying this eel. Now I don't want to eat anymore. There's more cocaine knocking about than there used to be, is what they reckon. Yeah? It's in the shrimp.
Yeah, a study published, scientists from King's College London, in collaboration with the University of Suffolk, made the surprise, in inverted commas, discovery after taking samples from 15 locations across the farming county of Suffolk. I mean, this is just saying Suffolk, so
it's got to be everywhere. It's got to be everywhere.
You'd imagine so.
Yeah,
but
one would imagine so. It's not healthy for us. It's not great that we're doing this, but there you go. It is happening, and I'm not sure what you can do about it.
No.
Stop eating shrimp.
Well, yeah, but
of the two options,
smoking instead.
Smoke shrimp. Yeah, that's true. There are other options, but that's one of them. Yeah, okay, you could.
Yeah. I know you like keeping abreast of Katie Price news. Katie Price fears her ears will fall off as her facelift scars don't heal quickly after getting infected. So she's jetted off to Turkey to get multiple operations last week, and she's worried that the recent surgery is healing too slowly and that her ears might fall off.
I mean, obviously, does she wear glasses? And I mean, that's a serious question, because then what do you do? But You have to. I don't know what you do, but it's sad, all this, isn't it? In the end, Katie Price. Listen, she's made a lot of money. I don't know if she's still got it, but she's made a lot of money with very little in the way of a talent, basically. But it's all a bit sad that she's having to do this to her body. I really do think that.
Have you never considered plastic surgery?
It is sad.
I told you I've considered plastic
surgery.
It is
sad, and I don't care.
Do you not?
No.
I mean, I understand. I
don't
look,
care, because at the end of the day, plastic surgery, if you want to do it, fine. But if you want to make it a habit, then why?
But
I don't get it.
There's a lot of pressure on people, particularly in those sort of business, modelling and all the rest of it, to look a particular way.
Yeah, but she's shown to be quite an astute businesswoman, the way she's gone about and made her money
in
what she's
doing. I'm not sure she's still got a lot.
And you'd have thought that she would understand that there comes a point where, you know...
Yeah. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Let it go. I have considered plastic surgery when I was a kid. I told you this for my nose, right? Because I didn't like the fact that I had a big nose, and I went along, even though I went to a Jewish school, and it wasn't like I was alone. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, it was a nasal extravaganza in my class. But I went along, and I said, I talked about it, and he said to me, it's called rhinoplasty, and it made me feel great about myself. When I realised I looked like a bleeding rhino. But since then, no. Have you considered it? Have either of you considered?
Never.
No. Have you, Paris? No.
Not yet.
No.
Still young.
That's true. But I don't know. I don't know. I saw a woman yesterday. She'd obviously had Botox in the lips or something, or whatever it was. Lip fillers. She looked ridiculous.
Yeah.
She looked ridiculous. But it's not. Hey, who am I to say what's ridiculous or not?
Yeah. Somebody said to me about this eye, because I've had a bad split there and there and whatever, and it's closed a little bit there.
Yeah.
So would you ever think about doing it? I'm like, no.
Can you see out of it?
Yeah.
That's why
I'm like...
Yeah, why would you do it? There comes a point beyond which you wouldn't do it, but I feel sorry. I actually feel sorry for her. I genuinely do. She doesn't seem like a terrible
person. If I live to 100, then I might have one.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, at that point, maybe a few fillers, something in the forehead or something, but I tend to
feel... Make you look 60 again.
Make me look 60, that's right. 80 is the new 90.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's a bit sad in the main.
If you're worried about her publicist says she's absolutely fine and recovering as she should do.
We don't want her ears to fall off.
Special glasses, though. You'll have to have a thing over the top like this.
And that's right.
See, you'd have to go to the top of
glasses like headphones
and
or something like that.
On the top of her head there.
I think Luther's just discovered a great business idea.
What, for people whose ears fall off? That's true, because that happens all the time. I mean, there was four last week on the tube that I was on. Just you can hear these doof. And you go, oh, that's another one gone. Your ears are full. Oh, you can't hear me.
Would they make? I don't think the ears would make that much noise, would they?
Well, you wouldn't hear the noise, obviously, but I.
You don't understand comedy, do you?
Come on. Anyway.
Love sport.
Paris is like the designated driver today. He's like the grown up in the room. What have you got, Paris? Can you turn him on? Can we turn Paris on? That'd be nice. Sorry, that sounds weird.
Not usually at 7:30 in the morning.
No, a bit early for that.
Yeah, I'm always the designated driver. Ian.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to talk about Caster Semenya a little bit, because, of course, past couple of days you've had what is a landmark case.
It is.
In athletics. But despite the ban being upheld, or not the ban, sorry, the decision being upheld by the Court of Arbitration for Sport, she could run in the 800 metres tomorrow in Doha at the Diamond League event, which lots of people are suggesting, well, she goes there, go run the world record, like an epic mic drop, run the world record and then just leave
walk
the sport.
Away.
You know, she has hinted a great deal that she will walk away from athletics.
Yeah.
And it's something that's divided opinion. Yesterday, of course, we had Sharon Davis on with Matt Butler. Matt Butler saying, you know, sport is inherently unfair. And Sharon Davis, who has experience of dealing with, not the same experience, obviously, because it's natural, but experience of dealing with athletes who have higher levels of testosterone.
Yes.
Saying that it's not Semenya's fault, but it is unfair, and she shouldn't be allowed to compete.
Unfair. It's unfair that Usain Bolt is 6'5" and got amazing levers that can propel him quicker. It's unfair to white people that black people are faster runners. You know, I mean, I'm just saying there are various advantages that people have. It's unfair to Europeans that Africans grow up in mountainous regions and can run distance races much better than we can. So, you know, what should we suggest that sport is inherently unfair? Which is what I was trying to say to Sharon Davis. But I understand from Sharon Davis's point of view, she's been on the at the start line at a race, an Olympic race, with people who are drugged up to the eyeballs. Now, there's no suggestion, of course, that Caster Semenya is any of that. This is all naturally occurring,
and that is quite important when the fact you say that people are drugged up because they've deliberately gone out and taken. These,
she hasn't, though, has she? Caster Semenya.
And
we're forcing her to take drugs. We're forcing her to take testosterone suppressants. I don't know. This doesn't sit right with me. I mean, I've been talking about it for the last couple of weeks, and
it hasn't got any easier either
way,
has it?
It hasn't got any easier either way, but I'm starting to feel like I'm on Caster Semenya's side at this point, because the more you talk about it, the more you think, God, yeah, there are so many naturally occurring unfair advantages for one person or another in all sorts of sports. Yeah. And why is she being singled out? And just because it's testosterone, what does it actually matter? I mean, I know that Sharon Davis was saying it's chromosomal, and maybe further down the line they will test the chromosomes. And if you're an XY instead of an XX or whatever it is, then maybe that's what, you know, but that will happen earlier in life. And someone like Caster Semenya will be steered away from running particular races because it does give her an unfair advantage. I don't know. I just feel it does feel a little bit personal, and I understand why she's taking it personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Telegraph have got two different opinions. They've gone for Jade Johnson, who's the former British Olympic long jumper, and Kelly Southerton, who's a 3-time Olympic bronze medalist. Jade Johnson kind of agreeing with the IAAF's ruling and the Court of Arbitration for Sport upholding it, saying that there's two issues here. You've got the human rights issue, and then you've got the sports issue. And if you're on the outside looking in, like you are in athletics, you are, Luther, it's easy to look at the human side and see this as a personal attack on Caster Semenya.
Yeah.
She's saying, you know, it's not a personal attack, but the reason she's giving it, saying it the right call, is that she's said that when she competed against Russian athletes who are cheating, you'd expect them maybe to have a bad day because maybe they're tapering off the drugs or they've got something, you know, they're having a low day. Whereas with Caster, you've got no chance. And it's, as an athlete, she's basically saying, if your rival is going to be like that and with high levels of testosterone, what's the point of competing?
I mean, look, yeah, I think that's a perfectly valid point. And you can imagine countries looking at that and basically finding girls who are DSD, right, who have differences in sexual development, and steering them towards those races because they know that they've got a good chance of medals. And then for any girls who don't have that condition, any girls who don't have, who are not like that, what's the point in them competing in those races? Because they don't have a chance of winning.
Right.
Sport is not, it's not the same as life in general. We know that, right? It's a closed thing, and the sports authorities can demand what they want. Kelly Southerton is saying different, by the way, right?
But she said there, said that it's not personal. Of course, it's personal.
Well, because
it is personal to her. And I don't understand how anybody can ever say it's not personal. I know that really does tick me off when people say that.
Well,
because it is personal to her. Yeah, because she's the one that has been singled out in all of this. Because she's the one. So, of course, it's personal. And for someone to say that is them really not thinking it through.
But she's, of course, not the only athlete at this distance who is, you know, being affected by hormone regulations. Francine Niyonsaba, from Burundi, as last month confirmed that she will also kind of have to take these hormone regulation things. So it's
not just about Caster Semenya.
But it's personal to all these athletes that are doing it. It's personal to them.
Yeah.
And we must never, ever lose sight of that. There's a person beyond all of that, the science and everything, there's a person there. And they've got feelings and whatever. We must not forget that.
Okay, but what I would say to that is there are also people who are racing against what they consider to be unfair advantages. They're persons as well.
Yeah,
persons.
Yeah, people. But that's why we shouldn't forget in all of this, either side of it, there are people's feelings.
I think we we've been quite measured in the way we've talked about this in the last couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, Kelly Sutherton kind of saying, when you have something you are born with, it seems your natural right to compete in the gender you know yourself as. Then to be told you have to artificially change yourself and your situation is doubted, I do not think that is right.
No, well, there are views both ways, but it looks like Caster Semenya is going to run a couple more races and then make a decision whether she's what, 29, Caster Semenya? So she's coming a bit nearer the end of her career, although, you know what, with the way athletes are now, they could run into their mid-30s. And still do very well. Kelly Holmes won 2 gold medals at 34. So, and at that distance, incidentally. You know what? We'll see how it goes.
Love sport.
So, AFC Wimbledon, 10 points from safety in February, have almost achieved the miraculous underbody downs and secured their League One status for another season. They remained unbeaten for their last 6 games. Downside have risen to 19th with a better goal difference than the 3 teams currently sitting below the dreaded dotted line. Will more than likely only need a point against already relegated Bradford to stay up. Joining us now is the former Wimbledon midfielder, Stuart Castledine. Good morning, Stuart.
Ian, how you doing? You all good?
Yeah, we're fine. Thank you very much. He's almost done it. I mean, you'd have taken this maybe 6-8 weeks ago, wouldn't you?
Oh, it's been very, very tough stuff. It's been magnificent. Absolutely brilliant. The boys have been superb. Can't believe what we've almost achieved. We've just got a final hurdle now tomorrow at Bradford.
What has Wally Downs done to bring about this? I mean, it is pretty much their miracle status already.
Hey, Luke, how you doing? Yeah, all good. I mean, do you know what? It's difficult to put your finger on it. I mean, there's just been a bit more fight. There's been a bit more self-belief. I think a massive factor has been Aaron Ramsdale and goal. He's come on loan from Bournemouth and he's just been unbelievable. And I just think it's given the whole back four a little bit of more confidence. And it's difficult to say what Wally has done, but there's been a lot more bite. There's been a lot more fight and we've been getting the results. It's just been a huge turnaround.
Do you think... I mean, maybe this doesn't count in this particular case, but I was wondering if there's something about a person coming in who knows the club a little bit. I mean, obviously, Neil Ardley was there before and he knew the club as well. But you understand the point I'm making, a little bit like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when he started at Manchester United. Someone who knows the culture of the club, who can tap into that, that maybe has got to be worth a few points to you.
You might well be right. I mean, it's a difficult one because, you know, Neil Ardley's a good friend of mine and, you know, and he was a good guy and a great coach and, you know, and to be fair to him, the players that are there, a lot of his players that he brought in. So, yeah, I think they maybe just needed a fresh perspective, a fresh voice in the changing room after Neil being there for so many years. It's difficult to put your finger on it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that Wally does have that old school Wimbledon ethos, maybe that was it. You know, maybe he just needed someone with that little bit of a never say die attitude and, you know, a little bit of grit in him to kind of, you know, get these lads to put their foot in and turn it around.
So absolutely.
Whatever he's done, it's been great.
Cut up a few suits in the dressing room or something. Get everyone going.
Yeah, I think maybe it's been a bit of a blend of the real old school Wimbledon stuff. And, you know, the boys can play though as well. It was always as well. You know, looking at the performances at the beginning of the season, it was always one of those where you scratched your head and thought, like, how are these lads not winning more games? You know, you saw the cup run that they had and, you know, beating West Ham.
That's right. I mean, I was going to say about the FA Cup. At what sort of a part did that play in the progression of what they achieved, well, what they've achieved to this date, you know, having won that game?
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe it gave them a little, you know, a chance to look inside themselves and think, hold on a minute, you know, we're a decent team here. How are we losing to, you know, some of these mediocre teams in League One when we can go and beat West Ham? So, you know, perhaps it maybe gave them that inner belief to kick on and, you know, and who knows? But, you know, they certainly didn't deserve to be at the bottom of the table, which they were, and results recently have proven that. And, you know, we're on a great run and let's keep it going tomorrow and stay up.
Now, what about Joe Piggott? I mean, he won April's Player of the Month in League One. He must have been a big part of this.
Yeah, no, magnificent. You know, picking who will score and all that nonsense. He's been brilliant. You know, he's put a few, you know, quite a few goals away, and yeah, just all around the team. You know, the lads think we're just perhaps underperforming, and they've got a little bit of belief now, and you know, they're winning games as they should be.
Well, here's hoping tomorrow. You've got a reasonable chance, haven't you, Bradford? And because I can see that Southend and Wimbledon, Southend have got a tough game against Sunderland as well, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's in our hands, and you would hope the fact that Bradford are already down and might take the foot off the pedal. You know, I mean, but it's in our hands, and if we win, we're up, and even if we don't win, as long as around us go our way, we can still stay up. But yeah, we're going to be going all out for the win. I mean, personally, I've I try and go to as many home games as I can. Not been on away days as such. I'm on the bus. I'm on the fun bus
tomorrow.
On the way up to Bradford with the boys. I promised there's a hardcore group of Wimbledon fans. I promised them if it was all on the last game of the season, I'd come resplendent in my old school cast iron number 19 shirt. I'm like a proper Wally. I'm going up with all the
fantastic
fans.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so I'll be there.
All right, right. It's an alcoholic drink and then a water drink. Right? Yeah. That's how it goes.
That's right. And lots of photographs. You've got to post lots on Instagram and Facebook and everything.
And Stuart, come back on Monday if you make it. Right. Obviously, if they don't make it, we don't want to talk to you because it'd be just miserable.
No. Absolutely. By all means, if we win, I'll tell you some stories. You
nice to speak to you, Stuart. See you soon. Likewise, have a good weekend. As the former Wimbledon midfielder, Stuart Castledon. That's tremendous performance by them.
Brilliant.
To get out. As you said, they're just nicking point here, point there. There were a couple of times when you thought Jena could have won that game, but they've just slowly moved up the table.
That has been an issue because they're still the lowest goal scorers, aren't they, in that bottom six where they are.
Yes,
and,
they are.
You know, it just shows, and that's what afflicted them at the beginning of the season, why they just weren't scoring goals. They couldn't find the back of the net. And obviously that's still been an issue, although they seem to have got a bit of improvement here and there with it, but that seems to be the major problem for
really,
them.
Really, really low amount of goals in 42 from 45 games. Mm. I mean, that's just not good enough, is it really? Well, they have to sort that out.
Yes.
Feed the pig and he will score, as he said. That's hilarious, isn't it?
This is Love Sport.
I'm watching photos of Rory McIlroy putting, and not putting very well, although that one was a better one. It's a comedy breakfast on Love Sport Radio. Paris has come in. He has some stories from inside the newspapers. Paris!
Yes, I do. Now, have you ever had an unfortunate nickname?
An unfortunate nickname?
Yeah.
It depends what you mean by unfortunate. We've all had nicknames which we, especially on air, you cannot repeat.
Yeah.
Well, a football ground in Qatar has been dubbed the Vagina Stadium.
Right!
This is a... A World Cup that's been unveiled ahead of the 2022 World Cup.
It looks like a vagina.
I'll pass you a picture, which helps our listeners a great deal, I understand. But
what's the name of the stadium?
The stadium is the Al Wakrah Stadium, which will host matches up to the quarterfinals at the 2022 World Cup, designed by the British Iraqi architect Dame Zaha Hadid.
She's amazing.
Who did the aquatics venue at London 2012.
Yes.
The plans were first released in 2013. They said to be inspired by the flowing shape of a dhow boat, a traditional Arabian pearl diving and fishing vessel.
Right, yeah, but also by that. A vagina.
But but that's more the angle that is taken, that's given you that impression.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, basically she said it's really embarrassing. They come up with nonsense stuff like this, what they're saying. Everything with a hole in it's a vagina, that's ridiculous. But, I mean... We're looking at the picture. If you obviously, listeners, you can't see the picture. I would have a look at it. The Al Wakrah Stadium. Don't search Vagina Stadium. Search Al Wakrah Stadium.
No, because something else might come up.
I would suggest.
To be honest with you.
If you're desperate to have a look at it, that is, and you know, so that's.
She died, didn't she, Dame Zaha? Yes, she did. I love her buildings. These sort of flowing.
Yeah.
Buildings. They're beautiful. They are works of art. This is a beautiful stadium. And yes, you could say in some senses it does look a bit like a vagina. But you know what? Unfortunately, that's what it'll be named from now on, won't it?
Yeah, we name that from now on. But it's a revolutionary stadium. It's new air conditioning technology to bring temperatures down to around 72 Fahrenheit for fans and players.
Right.
So that's what is needed for a Qatar World Cup, it being... very hot.
Yes.
As a country.
It's okay. There's so much I can't say at this point. So let's move on with that story.
Let's move on.
Really, not for morning radio.
No, not for any
radio, to be honest with you.
Testing your restraint.
I bless you. One. Thank you very much.
You can use
Thank
it tonight.
You. Yeah, I can. I probably can. Okay. Is there a particular spot in this stadium that is particularly sensitive? No, anyway. I'm just asking.
You couldn't resist it, could you?
Blokes,
you
would not be able to find that spot, though. That's the point, would they?
Right.
That's the point I'm making.
From Qatar to Harrogate, three lads racked up a £520 bar tab in what their local dubs Bill of the Week. Engineer Andy Kane claimed he had the lion's share of 85 Jaeger bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of drink.
I mean, I'm never... You know what? I read these stories and I just think, why are people doing those things to their bodies? I mean, I like to have the odd drink. Do you drink at all, Luther? You do.
Very odd.
Once in a while. I'm the same, you know. And I don't know. It's nice, alcohol and everything. But he had 85 Jaeger bombs. Why would you do that to yourself? And so he ran up a bill of £500.
Yeah.
Plus in Harrogate.
In Harrogate.
Which is quite a nice town, actually.
Expensive place, Harrogate.
Expensive place. Yeah. And okay, what's this story, aside from idiotic young men get drunk?
Yeah, basically just the size of the bar tab, £520. Have you ever got a bar tab that high?
No, why would I do that?
I don't know.
I don't go out and drink Cristal because I'm not a rapper, oddly. And
are you not?
No, I'm not. Yeah.
So it wasn't your mixtape I found outside, was it?
It wasn't my mixtape. Yeah. MC Jew. I would be. My name is Ian Stone and I'm the Jew of the group. I love well-cut trousers and chicken soup. Something like that.
It's a number one hit in the making. Talking of drinking, we choose the drinks we choose depend on the buzz they give us rather than their taste, a study has suggested.
Yeah. It's really all about the, what you want. Do you feel a bit up, or you're feeling a bit morose or whatever? It's that sort
really?
Of... Really? Yeah.
If I'm tasting, I'm drinking, the taste is what it's about.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know, sometimes I feel like a bit of beer because I feel like a bit more buzzy.
Don't drink beer, never have drunk beer.
Right, okay, fair enough. But anyway, do you drink for the buzz or the taste?
For the sugar, mainly.
For the sugar, right. Okay.
US researchers say basically it comes from how our genes relate to psychoactive properties of drinks. So the caffeine in coffee, the sugar in fizzy drinks, the kind of the buzz, like with caffeine, literally the buzz, the sugar, the happy kind of high you perhaps might get from it, is why we choose those drinks. So you're saying...
Sugar, certainly. I get that. I totally get the sugar one, yeah. I do like a sugary drink once in a while. It's quite nice. Coke at a gig sometimes. But again, that's also about caffeine.
Back on it again, isn't you?
No, but the Coca-Cola.
Back on it again. We can't stop talking about drugs.
We can't, no. The Coca-Cola, I do sometimes before a gig, I need a bit of a kick, just in my head. So that is the psychoactive property as opposed to the taste of it,
That is what a US study has suggested. Now, marital advice or relationship advice from some Michael Palin. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It says the secret to his 53-year marriage is spending long periods apart.
Away, exactly.
It's true.
Exactly.
Apparently, a lot of people say that.
Yeah, get a travel program, and then you're fine. Yeah.
The amount of travel programs we'd have on the air.
Listen, you're a long time together with Lauren, aren't you? You're a long time together. Fair time.
Yeah.
Fair time.
Yeah.
Well, fair time. I'm a long time together with my missus, 34 years. And, spend time apart regularly. I live with someone else most of the time. Seems to work really well. By the way, Rosie, that is a joke. That is a total joke, by the way.
Is she listening?
Probably not anymore. Just threw the transistor radio against the wall. The point is that you, I think it does. Absence makes a heart grow fonder, is what they say.
Yes.
Do you know? They do say that. I don't know. A little bit of a break once in a while. I think spending too much time in each other's pockets ain't great. That's my feeling.
Right. Ian Stone's advice to all those couples out there.
It's working so far, so, why not?
Fair enough.
And that's it, really.
Yeah.
That's all you needed to know. Michael Palin said that. Michael Palin, the nicest person in the world.
Yeah, Sir Michael Palin.
Sir Michael Palin. Although I imagine he doesn't exist on it. He's not like Mo Farah.
Not Sir Mo.
No, quite. Okay.
This is Love Sport.
Chelsea went to Frankfurt in the Europa League semi-final first leg last night. Fell behind, but got back to draw 1-1, looking good for the second leg. Joining us now is the ex-Chelsea winger, Clive Walker. Good morning, Clive.
Good morning, Ian.
Morning. I want to start. Decent enough performance from Chelsea, particularly between about the 20th and the 80th minute. What were your feelings about the fact that he didn't start Eden Hazard?
I think, like everybody else, shock, really. I think we always look to understand the rotation system that they have these days. And we try and understand they're trying to get the best out of the best players. Hazard started the last five games and has been involved. But you feel that a semi-final in a European competition is a massive game. So quite surprised to see he wasn't starting. I firmly expect him to start against Watford on Sunday. But, very shocked that he wasn't in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all were at that one. But do you think Sarri looked at it and thought, maybe keep hold of him, keep him fresh for... not really much for the Watford game, but really for the return leg next week. because I think he knows that they've got a better than average chance of winning that. He's pretty much come out and said it himself, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have to try and understand the games that are left this season. I would guess Sarri's in a difficult position. If Chelsea don't get into the top four and don't win the Europa League, then there's going to be lots of questions asked about him from upstairs, you tend to feel, if Chelsea don't win anything. So I think he's in a position right now where he's having to manage it the best way he possibly can. And obviously now with hindsight, with the result, and especially with the away goal, you have to say that Chelsea are in a good position to go through. So to the final. So, you know, it's all on the table for him, but he's there, as we always say, paid the big bucks to make the big decisions.
It's an odd season for Chelsea in a way, because if they do win the Europa League and get into fourth place and get in the Champions League, and they've got to a Carabao Cup final, win another cup final and top four, that's a good season. And yet there's been a lot of disquiet at Chelsea through the year.
I'll agree. That would be a good season. And of course, another few weeks and we'll know the answer to that. But it could go horribly wrong, of course. So there's a long way for it to go yet. Yeah, lots to play for. But yes, it's been a difficult season for some of the players. It's been a difficult season for some of the fans to actually understand Sarri ball, as he calls it, and to understand the way to play the game. But I think if you look at a lot of teams now, they're all playing with goalkeepers who are very, very good with their feet, who are able to pass, who are accurate, who are confident as well. And where some players do struggle, other players have stepped up and have really taken this on board and just play with that sheer confidence that makes it look attractive football. However, on odd occasions it goes wrong, which it obviously does. There's certain parts of the fans will come out and say, well, why don't we just smash the ball along? So, you know, you'll always have that opinion, especially in British football. So I think what he's doing, he's trying to change the culture a little bit, and maybe it's working.
Yeah, do you think he's really succeeding? I mean, Jorginho looks like he's finally beginning to settle in and look the player that we saw of him over in at Napoli and whatever.
Yeah, Luke, I think you're right. I think he has changed some. I don't think he's changed everybody, and I don't think he ever will.
But no.
I think what he's trying to do is trying to stick to his guns, and you can praise him for that, for wanting to do that. Some will say that's more stubbornness, but others will say, well, he's trying to change the culture. And as I say, you know, other teams are playing some sort of similar style now, and so we have to understand that football evolves and moves on, and we are able to see football played in a different way. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But at the end of the day, everybody wants success.
Yeah.
So we've got a two or three-week period now where the club needs success, because that's what it's been used to over the last 15, 16 years.
And one of the players I want to talk about, certainly the future with Chelsea, is Ruben Loftus-Cheek. He played well, very, very well yesterday. He's had a lot of injuries, but he could really step forward now, couldn't he?
Well, I thought he was absolutely magnificent for what we've seen of him this season. I mean, he sort of stepped forward and he sort of stepped up into the first team, which is something that you always want your youth players to actually achieve. And Callum Hudson-Odoi as well is another one. And I think Christensen is another one. So if we reflect on it from Chelsea's perspective, there's three players there who stepped forward. Ruben last night made huge steps. And I think if he looks back at what he did, and I hope he does, he'll maybe get to understand what the players that play around him have encouraged him to do. The managers encouraged him, but the fans haven't seen enough of it. And I think he needs to do that on a more regular basis. And I think it's the same thing you say to all youngsters. You know, show what you can do. Go out there and prove it. And I thought last night he certainly did, because I thought he was immense.
Well, you've got Watford Saturday, and then the next one after that will be Leicester, talking just about the Premier League at the moment. How will he actually go into the Watford game, knowing that he's obviously got this really to finish the Europa League semi-final off in midweek?
Well, I think we talk about the pressure of managers and making the right decisions. In my opinion, I think he should throw everything into the hat now. You know, the last few games, I'm not saying gamble, but I think he's got to throw in his top players. And of course, Eden Hazard has to play. But as you know, Luther, it's only against Watford, so it should be okay.
Boom!
There is no need for that. I was very polite. I've been very good about Chelsea.
Well, you got me up early in the morning. Fair enough. So you know what it's like.
I know exactly what it's like. And for that reason, now...
You're
going to
cut me off.
God, no, I'm not going to. I would never do that.
but I've said it all along. I think this game against Leicester could be a very, very vital game. Yeah. And I think whatever... I've said this for a few weeks now, that Leicester... we saw Arsenal go there. It's a very tough place to go to on your last game.
Yep.
So I think it all probably rides on that in the Premier League.
Thanks, Clive. Enjoy the weekend. Clive. We'll speak to you soon.
See you guys.
Good luck, mate.
Clive Walker there, ex-Chelsea winger. Having a bit of a dig there, Luther. There was no need for that, but I thought it was funny all the same.
I thought it was always... It's always worth it, see? There's nothing wrong with it at all.
It's all part of the bants.
I don't take offence at all.
Not at all.
This is Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back on Monday. Oh, 8 o'clock on Monday. That's right, because it's a bank holiday. I get a lie in. See you soon. Ta-da.